If you're betting March Madness, you should be doing it at MyBookie. This is the best betting stretch of the year. Upsets, buzzer beaters, and if you're going to take your shot, you might as well take it where the payouts hit harder. Only at MyBookie, you've got the money bag. Money bag gives you boosted odds and juiced payouts on select games. Same picks, bigger potential returns. When you're staring at that Sweet 16 matchup or loading up a Final Four play, MyBookie can turn a good hit into a great one. This isn't the week to sit back and wait. Lines are moving, futures are tightening. The edge is right now. Head to mybookie.ag, use code NBASZN, and get your first bet covered up to $500. If it misses, just activate your bet back bonus token and run it back. March only comes once. Bet it smart, bet it big. Only at MyBookie.
Welcome in, everybody. It is Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. And as always, my co-host, J.C. Sherbert.
Yeah, I'm here.
Getting a little later start today. Crossover went long, talking about the apparent retention of Coach Lamont Paris as the head men's basketball coach here at South Carolina for the 26-27 season, before even playing the first game up in Nashville at the SEC tournament. We've discussed, you know, the ins and outs of all of it so much. We haven't talked about the timing. That I kind of take issue with the timing. I don't know. It's one of the more.
They didn't release a statement or anything. We just kind of broke the news.
Yeah. Well, I thought the university actually came out and confirmed.
Well, somebody at the university confirmed.
Okay.
Our boy David Kloniger. Whittle had it last night, and I had confirmed it this morning.
Yeah.
Just that it was barring a last minute change of heart. But so hats off to Whittle and Dave and myself for putting in the work. But there's been no statement. I think that's what Jamie was getting at the first hour. I think that with a move like this, that's, you know, maybe it's more common in the modern era of major college athletics. And I did say, and I do believe that we're going to see more stuff along these lines. I just think there's kind of a fine line between, well, in a normal era, you know, right before NIL, when schools were just throwing around money and firing coaches left and right, you know, but now maybe we'll hold. I thought maybe that was, with a new AD last year, maybe that was the play. You know, this is still a little bit more interesting, to say the least. But, given the history of this program, men's basketball at University of South Carolina, and the gross mismanagement and meddling and everything else that's taken place with it, the terrible decisions, the lack of support, the lack of resources across the board for every coach that's been here. I think no matter who the coach is, those areas all have to improve.
Yeah.
And I think that you keep making head scratching decisions for four decades, you know, since the early 80s, eventually maybe one of those head scratching decisions works out for you. Maybe this is the new normal. I mean, to me, just looking at the numbers and the contract, you know, I don't think if you're serious about competing in the sport in the SEC, that if you feel like you're the AD and the guy needs to be fired and the coaching change is what's best for the program, if you can't make that, then you have no business being in the league.
Yeah.
Period. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of it. And I don't know. Maybe everybody in the athletic department at Carolina realizes that. Maybe it's above them, because I've heard some very, very unrealistic comments about buyouts from above the AD athletic department and president's office about it.
So here, one of the things I have on this is, this decision reeks of BOT meddling.
Yeah, and you'd think that, but I don't,
or at least
I don't know about the BOT this time, just based on I think that a lot of the movers and shakers on the BOT are probably more apt to fire than to retain. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how you can, but maybe it's another faction. I don't know. You know, yeah. To me, I think there's a lot of talk in the state government now about college athletics in our state in the General Assembly. And there's just some very interesting opinions there. Some people are just, you know, I don't think they understand major college athletics. And if you're a leader in our state politically and you don't, you know, you don't think that's the way to go and you want to stand, you know, I've warned against when South Carolina thinks they should just go on their own. It's happened before, right? You know, it's happened to the University of South Carolina in the ACC, leaving the ACC. You know, don't be like we are, because we are that way, and fall on the sword on this, you know. And so the NIL bill that's going to shield that from public disclosure in the House, there's all this talk about spending money and taxpayer money and all this good stuff. Never mind, the state's in great financial shape, but, you know, who knows. But if the leadership in our state wants to, and it still is my state, care if I don't live there now, I will eventually. Right. Businesses in that state, right? They don't want to live in the reality of modern college, then they need to take their power and force the University of South Carolina to either go back to the ACC, or both schools need to drop out of Power Four.
Yeah.
And we'll see how many of those people get reelected. because that's the communication that you're making. And so I don't know that with this NIL bill is pretty important, because it could put every program in the state at a competitive disadvantage if you have to disclose it. And you're just looking at all kinds of competitive issues there, right? That you don't need. It's unnecessary. And there's probably a compromise to be had. And I don't know that, you know, based on the last time there was a buyout with Will Muschamp, with people like Dick Arpootley and cut cartwheels and drug the BOT members up before everybody and started peppering questions that the BOT guys didn't really know how to answer. And, you know, and there was a simple answer to all of it. You know, you just said there, we're in the Southeastern Conference. I'm sorry. That's the price of doing business. South Carolina's played one buyout in 30 years. One, you know, whatever, Dick, you know, I mean, but instead it was just like a lot of it was just bad. That was a bad time. So I think, in my opinion, that I don't know that maybe you're not trying to, because you want this bill passed, maybe kind of watch it a little bit. Don't give them any ammo to wreck it. Cause there are politicians in the state house, but you know, most did their one in particular did his undergrad at the other school in the state, you know, that have kind of their antenna up about it. So I'm not saying that's a reason either. Whittle did report that it was, he believed it was financial. I do think finances matter. For me to kind of get on board with that, I'd have to see. I mean, my question is it a lump sum buyout or is it not?
Right. Yeah. What's the wording?
Yeah, yeah. What's the wording in that? And I'd have to look into it. But, you know, it's fine. I do think this is a little bit different of a decision. And I will go to my grave saying that I don't think you can't just look at it like more NIL money. And that's the answer, because when you kind of look below the hood, there's more going on than just lack of resources. This team was bad and you knew it. Unlike last year's team, where it's like, if you just had a point guard, you know, like, dang it, Michi, you know, even if Michi had been there, you know, you're probably in the tournament. But this year, the you know, with 300% markup on your resources And then you kind of dig into, I'm not going to get into who was making what, but there's some surprises. And my counter to that is, you know, instead of spending all that, why not just go get three good players so you can compete and then go cheap on everybody else? Because the skill level of some of these guys, you could easily find in the D2 level or the low major level. Guys, this is one opportunity to play on the big stage.
Right.
But you have to find them. And so then it becomes, and this is probably a good thing, then it's like, well, why can't Lamont Paris and his assistants evaluate talent? Well, my question is this. Is there time? Remember last year, the portal window was closing because everybody thought the settlement was going to come. And right. They had front load.
Yeah, right.
All mm-hmm. this stuff.
Well, I think that speaks to a problem in the program. There should be somebody, JC, that operates in that kind of fashion, who is essentially a support analyst to identify talent that could potentially enter the portal. I mean, you could mine the mid majors. Other programs do this. They target these kids from the smaller schools, offer them life-changing money for a season or two, or one season, and then, you know, maybe you hold on to them, maybe you don't. But see, I feel like that's one of the flaws in the way things have been done at Carolina under Coach Paris. Like, there are those positions in football. I realize the rosters are immensely larger than they are for a basketball. So maybe you don't need two or three people to do that. Maybe you just need one dedicated person. And how much goodwill would be created if you were able to make evaluations better year over year than is going to end up costing you in the long run, attracting players? Like, and that's the other thing. Somebody needs to say something, because there are too many questions surrounding this program right now for fans to feel I'm not even looking for enthusiasm. I'm looking for, you know, just acceptance. What is it? You know, there's too many questions surrounding this whole situation right now. And I realize it's an untenable position because this current team still has at least one more opportunity to play because of the tournament. So yeah,
hopefully they win. I'll pull for them.
I'm not going to not pull for them, but there are fundamental problems as this current staff and roster are situated right now. And somebody needs to get out ahead of it and sell us on why this is a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. All right, let's go to break, dude.
Yeah, we had a break. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Here, we'll just fire it off quick here.
Mike here from my good friend Troy Branham of Golden Gate Mortgage. Let's face it, it's been a rough go for mortgage rates the last couple of years. And now more than ever, you need someone on your side to get you the very best possible rate on a new mortgage or a refi. That's where Troy comes in. 27 years of experience working for you. Conventional, FHA, VA, USDA, renovation, rehabilitation loans, all doable with my man Troy Branham of Golden Gate Mortgage. And when I say doable, I mean the best possible rate that's out there. It's a phone call that can literally save you thousands of dollars. 803-238-0111. 803-238-0111. You can also check out the website ggmortgage.com.
Jeffrey's got space and a touchdown.
If your golf game needs a little help, McKellar Enterprises is one click away. Meredith Taylor, a former Gamecock golfer, fields clients from all across the country. Golfers of every level are enrolling in her well-rounded golf camps. They're improving their game through virtual and on-course lessons. And now, many are a part of the membership program that gives you multiple monthly coaching options to get better. Are you improving for fun? Don't want to hold the group back any longer? Visit McKellarEnterprises.org today and go Gamecocks.
Test ride at Electric Bikes of Charleston today. Road trip ready. Ride comfortably. Forget road fatigue. The Velotric Fold 1 Plus features our exclusive Comfort Max frame design for an effortless, upright riding posture and a low step through. With an adjustable seat and stem, you'll be feeling great and ready for the next campsite adventure. Your back will thank you. Visit Electric Bikes of Charleston. Electric Bikes, Charleston.com.
New year, better floors. Now is the time. Refinish your hardwood floors with Recoat Revolution. Beautiful like new floors in just one day. No dust, affordable, and five stars. Give us a call in South Carolina, 803-397-1365. Or visit us at RecoatRevolution.com. Go Gamecocks!
Welcome to Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions. Basement crawl space encapsulation designed for your specific needs. Your crawl space can be susceptible to all sorts of issues, including moisture buildup, mold growth, and structural damage if not cared for properly. Let our trained experts provide basement crawl space encapsulation solutions to protect your home, improve air quality, and enhance energy efficiency. Schedule your consultation today for a safer, healthier space at dryspacecs.com. Dry Space Crawl Space Solutions, proud supporters of your South Carolina Gamecocks.
Clowns are people too. Clowns are people too. Now I own some tiny horns and got me those red shoes. I don't know much, but know one thing that's true. You don't know anything, just know that clowns are people too.
Now back to the clowns on the Chief Sports Network.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show. There's a little bit of clown music there to keep everybody's cup full of that here,
JC. Yeah, my bad. I got distracted by a text. My bad. I need to
settle. Nah, that's all right.
All right. So, yeah. All right. So, anyway, just hope it works.
Yep.
You know, hopefully they do beef up the front office, so to speak, in basketball. Because, I started thinking about that, too. Like, you know, I find myself running out of hours in the day with just stuff I've got to do and lack of people to do it, you know. And it's so I can relate to that, and I'm not running a major college basketball program. So there's so many players out there that you either have to be like good at going and finding them. Like we mentioned Frank Martin and Dave Odom, they all had connections. Like,
yeah,
that basketball is a lot about like who you know when you're trying to get under the radar guys, like Mike Kotsar. Frank knew his dude out there. And you have those relationships. I don't know that Lamont Paris does. I know Kerry Rich does locally with guys, but it's hard to hide good players in Columbia, South Carolina, though. This is such a basketball hotbed, and I can't think of any specifics, but you know, you need somebody that can get in there that knows people, has a national network of contacts. They can say, hey, Johnny or whatever your name is, I got a kid. I'm going to send it to, you know, and then you figure out the money from there. So, you know, so that's that. But so we'll see kind of what's going on with that. But you just got to hope. ITG, McKellar Enterprises chat box. Bryce has a football question. He said, if Bryles is running a high-tempo offense, how good does the O-line really have to be if the ball is getting out quick? Well, it's a running offense. You know, they run the ball a little more. It's not like an air raid type deal. So you do have to block. You got to open up holes. Matt Fuller, true statement. You know, the problem with the run game last year was no holes.
No room.
No push. But, you know, and I'll also say this, the pass game, you know, there's a lot of quick passes, and it can mitigate some issues and mask some issues up front. But I think it's a system that you don't have to be, you know, Wisconsin under Paul Christ and the ground and pound guy. I mean, they had Nebraska, you know, back in the 90s. You don't have to be that kind of offensive line. Even Miami had a fantastic offensive line. Indiana, fantastic offensive line this past year. You don't have to be like that, but you got to have tough kids that know their assignments, that play hard. And I love what Beamer said about the portal guys feel they all play with an edge. Because yeah. I can't tell you, I don't know that they necessarily did last year. And I mentioned this too the other day, and I'll just reiterate it. My big takeaway on the offensive line this year is going to be this. I don't care what they look like. I don't think they're going to pass the eyeball test like last year's monstrous, gigantic group where you had freaks like Tree and Josiah walking. I mean, Josiah's obviously out walking around the 6'6", 6'7", guys. And, you know, Shed Surratt was an awfully good-looking freshman. And Boaz Stanley was a big wide guy. I think you're going to look – if you looked, you know, just as an evaluation point, you're eyeball testing both lines, yeah. You'd probably take last year's. And I'm talking before they play a snap, not when you watch them try to execute assignments and hold blocks and things like that and effort and all that. It doesn't matter to me. Because even Jacarius Peak is 6'4", 310. He's built a little different than your franchise 6'7", 330-pound tackle. But the important thing is they execute and they play tough and hard. You know, because I think with how many 45 sacks or whatever last year, that this offense can cut down on the sacks. Tempo offenses typically do. And then if somebody starts to get after you and you can't really, you know, don't have a whole big drop back throw game. Kendall Briles isn't going to force that issue. And that's the other thing about switching to this style of offense. It's like, okay, it's like Steve Spurrier. If some teams were, and I'm not comparing the two, they're different play callers, obviously. Steve Spurrier is one of a kind, right? But good play callers at the college level, what they do is when you take something away, because you can't, oftentimes defenses in college can't stop everything. And I think that's a little bit different with the NFL. NFL, they can realistically stop everything, you know, with the constraints of that league. They're covering up the bubble screen and they're taking away the inside zone. So we're just going to run Lenoris around the edge. And you had to have somebody hit a block there and seal the linebacker or whatever. So that's the takeaway on the offensive line is I don't know that when you just look at them, that they're going to look like the big old dudes you had last year where you go, man, that's a big, hefty, beefy offensive line, you know? But I do think that as long as they do play tougher and with an edge, that they'll be okay. And certainly I expect just a different look from them, Phil, because they have a new coach and it's a bunch of new players. Obviously, when there's that much change.
Yeah, it's a different philosophy, right? So, I mean, it's going to look different. The players, as we've kind of – dug into that, like Clements has a type, right? Briles' offense requires types of guys. So yeah, I mean, it's going to look different, but looks don't matter.
Looks don't matter.
Just,
I don't care.
This production point, matters, right? They could just be, you know,
just go flat out there and get in front of somebody, man.
That's right. Just
but, because body I'll up. Tell you, you know, and the feedback I've gotten, I mentioned it on coffee today after initially talking about Lamont. You know, the feedback I got is Briles fits right in. Remember the whole aggressive, creative, and fun conversation that we had about the offense over and over again. That's what he is. You know, one of the players, I don't remember which one on interview the other day was like, he does stuff I had never seen anything like that before. You know, That's good. South Carolina needs that. It makes sense for what the program is. It makes sense for the types of quarterbacks you can recruit. It makes sense for the plethora of under the radar and on the radar receiver talent that this state puts out. It makes sense because you're always going to struggle on the offensive line if you try to line up and bully people in the SEC. There are very few schools that can do that. I mean, even the University of Texas, right, last year, they lost some offensive linemen off of their semifinal team from the year before. Think about how much Arch Manning struggled and how much they could not protect him. They played Florida, right? They had no chance to block Florida. Then Arch would hold on to the ball too long. Florida beat them. Florida was a 3-4-8 football team.
Right.
Florida beat the mighty Texas Longhorns because they couldn't protect. Didn't matter what Sark drew up. So you're going to run into days like this, but if you're going fast and you can hit blocks and you're tough and things like that, it can work out. I don't know that this is going to be an offensive line, Phil, similar to what Kendall had in 2022 at Arkansas. Right. Because before they had some injuries, and that team kind of got derailed by injuries. They ended up losing the Liberty at the end of the year. And then they blamed Kendall Bryce, the play caller.
That's right.
And then they hired Dan Enos, and everything sucked terribly. Right. Had to fire him 10 games in. But, you know, that offensive line, if you remember when Carolina went out there and played them game two in 2022, there's a good looking group.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a good looking group.
Right.
But you can kind of see when you go back and watch that game, Carolina couldn't stop Rocket Sanders or KJ Jefferson. And then that Arkansas team also wasn't even close talent wise to the receivers Carolina has.
Mm-hmm.
That Arkansas team kind of had some portal pieces. They were kind of okay. But we talked to Trey Biddy before that. So they basically had Trey Knox.
And yeah, right. Yeah. He had a tight end.
That's kind of crazy. You know, Trey Knox and Rocket Sanders played against the Gamecocks and ended up being Gamecocks. But Clint says we have the same standard for the offensive line as we do for basketball. Probably. I mean, you know, my thing, Clint, is winning games. And you look at other teams around the SEC that actually win games. And Carolina's won games. Carolina won 9 games and was a play away from a playoff with a very average to mediocre offensive line 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And you have a dual threat quarterback. That's what, you know, we talk about things around here that don't make sense. And there's a lot that's piling up, quite frankly. You have one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in America. Why are you getting sacked so many times?
Right. Why are you leaving him back there long enough to have
one read and go? Right. You know, now this past year, what teams did to kind of prevent the one read and go was they'd spy him a lot. But man, some of these teams had 2 spies. If you have 2 spies on the quarterback, somebody's open. There's some play for that.
Right.
Otherwise, everybody do that at all times. So I don't know. I don't know what happened. But, yeah, hopefully the offensive line gets good. Bryce says and adds, if the O-line can be consistent and not be a liability, Sellers will get in a rhythm and actually have time to think. Yeah. And in this system, too, unlike the last system, there's just not a lot of time to think at all. So you're naturally making quick decisions. That's why I think the big key, and this is more on Lenoris than Kendall Bryles, is master the RPO. Like, yeah. If I'm – because I don't know with as little – or the RPOs they have run the last couple of years have kind of been blended in. This thing Bryles is running is very, very heavy in that department. It's basically, you know, if you want a reference of an RPO heavy college team, Indiana would be one.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to, you know, so if it becomes second nature to where he gets really good at knowing, all right, this, you know, reading the defense and going, this is a dive. You know, this is the go give to the running back. This is a pull and throw. This is a pull and run it myself. Then you almost have something that's kind of like triple option football. Where it puts the defense in constant conflict, and you have to stop if you can block it, you know, because sometimes, you know, the quarterback's reading the box. And if the box is light, then it's a run. And if the box is not light, then it's a pull and throw or run it. So if you can do that, then you put the defense in constant conflict and you have some bigger, more physical backs that have good speed. You have a bunch of fast receivers and a freak and Nick Harbor. And, oh, you, by the way, you have a 240-pound guy that runs 4.5 in the 40 at quarterback.
The neutralizer. The equalizer.
The equalizer. And so it's kind of – if he can get that, you know, down, I think that's probably next to the O-line needs to be competent and be able to block, you know, that for the offense specifically, to me, him getting that down is good. Now, my understanding is from talking to people, I've never played quarterback, so I don't know. And if I had have ever played quarterback, it wasn't at a very high level. I don't think there were RPOs back then, but my understanding is Kendall Brown's offensive system is very simple to learn.
Right.
And again, it's got its roots in the high school ranks where you got a new group of knuckleheads every year that you got to teach this to. And they're high school kids. Trust me. I took one to school today because he lost his keys last night when he got back from playing outdoor football. And yes, it's 73 degrees here. Nice. People are outside playing football. It sometimes snows this time of year, so I'm pretty happy.
Yeah, that's right. Hey, at least you're out there, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, so that's the deal there. But anyway, all right, Phil, let's hit the final break.
Let's do it.
On Terrible Tuesday. It has been a little terrible, but not really.
Nah. Yes.
And yeah, we'll be back after this on the show. I got to quit saying D's Wings has ample parking. So it's ample parking if you go at the right time. If not,
at lunch.
If not, park across the street.
That's right. Anyway,
appreciate these wings out in West Columbia. Still a beautiful part of West Columbia right there. Nice part of town. Go across the Gervais Street Bridge. Get you some D's Wings. Tonight's Taco Tuesday. So get you some tacos. D's Wings, proud sponsor of Inside the Gamecocks, the show. We'll be back after this.
Hey, this is Cornbread Cowboy. And you're listening to the show. Be right back.
Palm Casual Patio Furniture are proud supporters of our Gamecocks. We have been making and supplying the highest quality outdoor furniture you can find for almost 5 decades. If you use your outdoor space to watch the Gamecocks, make it the best it can be. Visit palmcasual.com or visit one of our 4 locations in South Carolina. Go Gamecocks!
Looking for a new car? You need to think about a Kia. If you're in the market for an SUV, consider the new Kia Telluride or the new Kia Sorento. They're big, they're strong, and loaded with tech for thousands less than Honda or Toyota. You'll see the difference right away, and you get double the warranty. Plus, you get the JT's Advantage million-mile warranty and about 1,000 other things you have to see to believe.
If you want the biggest bang for your buck, it's time to think about a new JT's Kia.
We're serious about saving you money.
The Aventon Adventure 2 takes the same basic design as the original Aventon Adventure, making it an adventure bike designed to take you places that typical roads just don't reach, allowing you to ride whatever terrain you want based on your whims of the day. Look at what you're getting. Hydraulic disc brakes, torque sensor for responsive pedal assist, great LED lighting, suspension, a beautifully welded frame with excellent build quality, included rear rack, included fenders. The list just keeps going on.
Visit electricbikescharleston.com for more.
Gamecock Traditions is your one-stop shop for all things South Carolina. From apparel to tailgating, children's clothing to kitchenware, jewelry, or even gift cards. If it exists, it exists at Gamecock Traditions. Ship it to your home via gamecocktraditions.com or go see our friends in Lexington. Gamecock Traditions, a family tradition. Go Gamecocks.
Sell your quality sports and fitness equipment to Play It Again Sports and get paid. Recycling your in-demand sports gear keeps it available in your community. Sell, buy, trade, and win with Play It Again
Sports! Watch JC and Morgan every week on the Chief Sports Network.
Now back to ITN.
Welcome back, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show. Final segment of the show here on a terrible Tuesday. We'll keep things rolling right along. Been into the McKellar Enterprises chat box here. Been tired of dealing with administrative stuff. This Coach Paris thing came in a real bad time for me, JC. Just going around and around with the county school district up here.
Don't get me started.
The local school and.
It's all I've been able to do, not to tee up. You know, my mom was a public school teacher too, and I think that, and your wife is as well. I mean, I've come from a long line of teachers, public school teachers, but I'm very jaded as far as how they, some of them treat people.
Oh, I'm getting one now that, going back and forth with, I don't know if anybody's heard of seat time recovery for, that's where you have to. It's a grift is what it is. I'll tell you that flat out right now. So the state of South Carolina says if you miss 5 days, that is acceptable. But if you have a sixth absence, that you can't even excuse it via parent note. It has to be excused via doctor's note. But now they are kind enough. The Department of Education here in South Carolina is kind enough to offer us the ability to sit what's called seat time, which costs you, of course. You're going to have to pay a nominal fee to attend an hour of useless attendance that does nothing to further education, but will, of course, prop up and support graduation rates that we all understand are entirely arbitrary and only serve those within the system itself, not necessarily the mission or the populace of the state, vis-a-vis education. So we're going to have a meeting about the grift that's going on that I'm being foisted into. I understand what South Carolina law is. I also understand that there is a leeway inside the school districts themselves and the schools to make things like this go away. I also don't understand it for a kid who's got an A in the class. It would be completely different if my child were failing this class. I wouldn't have a leg to stand on there. But yeah, we're going to have a talk about it. And I didn't like the way that I was talked to in an email. So that also applies.
It's tough for me not to throw F bombs.
I'm doing everything I can to not.
Somebody was the guy at Menards, which is like Home Depot, was rude to my wife the other day. And I just, you know, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I would have just, it would have been an immediate F off. And I don't know who you think you're talking to, but I've, you know, my wife gets really upset when that happens. So I didn't say anything to this kid because it's like, they're out there to help, you know? And she's like, are you busy? She's like, he's like, yeah, this little kid, this little punk kid, he's stocking shelves. I'm like, your tag says customer service.
Right.
That doesn't mean do your busy work so you can go home early. And so she got mad. I was like, well, you just want me to throw it? I said, I'd have gone straight to F off.
The grocery counter, at the deli counter, it was like, I'm just standing there for a couple of minutes. These two people are just talking back there off to the side. And one of them turns around and was like, oh, do you need something?
Dude, don't talk to me about the deli counter.
I'm like, okay.
Crazy. All right, let's get back to it. The deli counter. I'll say something about the deli counter here in a minute because I got to go to Pete's today. Krager says it's not a lump sum buyout for Paris. That's a moot point. The university just sent out a a thing saying he's having media time in Nashville. John Whittle's up there. So I don't think he would be having a media time. You know, he's probably going to confirm that he'll be back. I sense a statement or something coming. So anyway, Craig says 300% markup is relative. If it went from 2 to 6 million, that's not enough. See, I contend that 6 million should have gotten you, because you know other teams spent 7. Alabama spent less than 8. They're top something in the country.
Yeah.
So I think it should get you in the ball game. You certainly shouldn't have the worst. I mean, I don't care if they finished ahead of whoever in the standings. They're the worst team in the SEC when you watch them play. You know, they kind of either hit shots and compete or they don't. It's not a good basketball team. But is it enough moving forward? No, I think everybody's realized that. But, I mean, you still want progress. I mean, I think. Bruin said, I had an uncle that told me as a child, South Carolina never win anything meaningful because of politics. My dad told me the same thing. And I thought after 2000, that was over. You know, 2000 came, Lou Holtz came, you know, they got, you know, Mike McGee retired, and that was probably the right time for him too. Some people think, you know, he hung the moon and he hired a lot of good coaches, but that's only part of it. Eric Hyman came in and built all the facilities and Ray Tanner continued that. And it looks, the whole University of South Carolina looks like a night and day better than it did 26 years ago. Columbia, the whole thing. I thought everything was beyond. I think everything's past that. Until the most recent basketball search, you know, and then some other things. And that I'm finally understanding what my parents were talking about. I'll say this, though, on the other side. Many, many schools with big-time athletic departments where people care about sports also have some political interference. It's not, South Carolina's not,
yeah,
you know, standing alone in that department. You know, I think sometimes folks in the General Assembly that maybe don't care about the University of South Carolina as much as some others don't always, you know, they kind of play politics with it. I think sometimes the Board of Trustees has not operated, you know, in a manner consistent with winning. But it hadn't been, it's been a while. So we'll see. I don't think the board had much to do with this other than maybe advice and consent. I think this was a leadership call internally. Bruin said the university is on the way of pushing away the younger fans. They already have for men's basketball. That happened when they didn't get rid of Dave Odom in time. That's where the seeds of that were planted. The war chest of credibility was the war chest of erosion. Because he had a tournament team, didn't get there. Two bad years, the Darren Horn years. Meanwhile, every other sport cycling way up. National championships, 11-win teams. Dawn Staley's getting her thing going. So it immediately became 4 out of 4. Frank Martin gets it to the Final Four. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, happy days are here again. And then it slips back to so-so-ness. And it's just never, there's like a whole generation. I mean, at one point when Odom and Fogler were there, Carolina went to the postseason. That was back when the NIT was actually something. Like 7 out of 10 years, 8 out of 11 years. They'd won 20 games. Like, you know, I mean, they weren't great. Yeah, they didn't make enough tournaments, but they're pretty good. I mean, at least much better than now. So, but you're right. You know, you continue to lose, and if you're losing across the board, yeah, that can erode you. I never thought I'd see anything like this again in my lifetime with all the losing. You know, now there's light at the end of the tunnel for baseball. Read Jamie Bradford's baseball bulletin, which will be sent out. If go to insidethegamecast.com and sign up for it. He's got some great stats on base percentage, you know, what he's been hammered home. And that kind of turned in the right direction.
Yeah.
You know, and I think if that can happen, the starting pitching is just kind of so-so right now, collectively. Alex Philpott gets the start tonight. He's going to pitch like 20 pitches or whatever. That's the type of arm that can solidify that rotation a bit, okay? What I do think Carolina has going for it is a really good bullpen, especially with Stone and Valentin. But the other guys have been pretty salty too, Phil. I mean, they've been pretty good. We hadn't had SEC play yet, but they've been pretty good. So your Zach Russells of the world, Gregoire. I think it's a funny name. Gregoire. So if they could start hitting the ball and being more selective and putting runs on the board, which has been the primary problem, then this team definitely can go to a regional. I mean, Carolina's not, alone now when you kind of look at all the SEC teams taking L's to Sac States of the world and things like that, you know? So, but yeah, you're right, Bruin. You got to win. And you also, it gets on people's nerves when there's no recognition. You know, sometimes people these days, I think that's why they get on social media and gripe. They just want to be heard. And I think it's up to any person in leadership anywhere to authentically communicate that people who are important, and the fans most assuredly are important. You don't get anywhere these days with an ivory tower approach. Communicate to them that they have been heard, right? And most ADs around here have been pretty good about that. Eric Hyman certainly didn't think that guy cared a whole lot about winning. Let me back up. Didn't care a whole lot about winning SEC style, you know, kind of put other things anyway. But I'll never forget when the day they hired Frank Martin. He said, we are committed to having a championship basketball program at the University of South Carolina. And things like that go a long way. Yeah, let's not just talk in terms of, well, you know, but we are committed to achieving high things. And I think that, you know, it's up to Donati or whoever to come out and say, we are still committed to those goals. And here's how Lamont Paris is part of reaching those goals. And here's how we're going to support him in doing it. And like Jamie said, it's our fault. Mm-hmm. We should have done more. And honestly, in men's basketball, this should have been done a long time ago. I mean, you have in every sport in the NIL era, you've had an opportunity to elevate no matter who you've been. We've seen it across the country. And South Carolina definitely missed the boat on men's basketball. Now, I understand you got a lot of money in football. You got a lot riding on football. Football's king. I get it. So when you're trying to catch up with NIL and money and things like that, you've got to divert resources to your cash cow. I get it totally. But, you know, the opportunity still exists. I think it's up to them to explain that. Krager said, if you want butts in the seats next year, you should have made a move, but that's a $35 million decision. What the heck do I know? It is, but I mean,
it's a gamble, right? On the administration's part.
If you can't pony up with the time, you got to know that sometimes things don't work out. You have to pay the buyout and hire somebody new. I mean, think about this too. I hate to say this. What if they have a losing season in football next year? What does that buyout look like?
Yeah, because then you're looking at basically an entire staff,
go look at the contract. No, but go look at the actual head coach's contract. It's not. I don't think it's cheap.
It would pale in comparison to what this replacement.
Yeah, it's not Mike Norvell level, but it's let's just say it's a whole lot more than basketball. So, and I certainly don't want that to happen.
No,
you know, so it's 27 million, I think. 19 to 27 is one of the 25 most expensive buyouts in college football, which is standard. Hey, it's not Mike Norvell's buyout.
No. There's nowhere near Jimbo
Fisher. Florida State, see, there's another one good year guy, you know. And look, South Carolina, Ray Tanner, Jeremiah Donati, whoever, Eric Hyman, you know, it's one of those things in college sports, you know, you're like, well, this is pretty standard what I'm doing here. And until everybody else says, no, we're not doing that, you can go take the Alabama job. We can do a little better after one good year. Or, you know, I mean, Lamont Paris was going to get Ohio State. I don't think his contract was that bad for a guy that a basketball coach. I mean, it's an issue now because things have gone south.
Right.
You know, people used to complain that Carolina didn't pay its baseball coach enough. Well, Palmieri's pretty highly paid. And, you know, so, I mean, I don't know. Bryce says, great elaboration, man. Took me back to when you mentioned Nebraska back in the day. Only 25% of that here. Yeah, I got you. Those Nebraska teams on the offensive line were something else, Bryce, something else. Chaco says Arkansas mentioned their receivers weren't that good. They had Treylon Burks. They did in 2021 when Kendall Briles was there. And that was actually – that ended up being their better year, Phil. That year they won 9 and went to the – beat Penn State in the Outback Bowl. And Burks had –
yeah, because that was KJ Jefferson as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was his first year as a starter. And that year, they beat everybody that was a rival, their rival. They beat LSU. You know, they actually have a little rivalry. They call it the Golden Boot, I think, with LSU. They beat LSU. They beat Texas. They beat Texas's butt week two. They beat Texas A&M. They got slapped by Georgia. Gosh, they did get slapped by Georgia. This was 2021, though. Georgia was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Just Beamer's first year. They lost by 1 point to Ole Miss, 52-21. I remember watching them play Auburn that year, too. Auburn kind of had their number out there, and they beat them. And then I remember they lost by 7 points against Alabama, 40-35 in Tuscaloosa. That team was really good. Two good coordinators too, Briles and Barry Odom, you know, with the defense. But I think that you know, Burks was there. He caught 61 passes, Chaco, for 1,140 yards. But the next year, they didn't really replace him with that team. Oh, Lance says, thing is, I saw the RPO from him in high school. I hope so. I hope it's just like his high school offense. I mean, please give it to me. Craiger's like, bruh, I'm stocking shelves, y'all. Clint says, Donati should just do a presser, come out, wave the white flag, and walk off. I'm really not interested in his justification, to be honest. I mean, I'd like to hear him out, but that's just me. I don't know that. I don't know. You get a lot of honesty out of people, but you know, that kind of thing.
Clint, well, we hear so little from him is the other thing. Like, yeah. I feel like, you know, I mean, I get it. His job is not to talk to the fans. It's to, you know, court the money and make the moves. But you know, you're going to need the fans at the end of the day. we're kind of the gas that makes the engine go. Like, you can build it up and it can be as pretty and beautiful and efficient and all these things, but if it's not, you know, lubed and gassed up, then you're not going very far.
Yeah. I don't know, man. I agree. It's just one of the Gregoire Noir. Like Dracar Noir.
Yeah. Fabrice.
Remember, what was that movie called? Boomerang. Remember Strange. That's an underrated movie, Boomerang.
Yes.
He had a phone song at the end of it. But I don't know. Yeah, those, I'm very interested to go and dive a little more into those Arkansas teams. Just looking at their 2021 results, the Georgia thing's a red flag because Georgia, Let's just say this. Georgia stopped Josh Heupel's bunch a whole lot up until this year, too.
Yeah.
Now, Will Muschamp stopped Josh Heupel when he was at, you know, but Georgia shut them out. Now, what does that mean? I don't know. You know, they scored 51 on Ole Miss the next week, lost by a point. You know, the Auburn game, Auburn kind of offensively ran it on them and stuff. That was interesting. And then I remember Alabama. That was a nip and tuck type of game. And Arkansas is firing at the end zone at the end. They could have won the game. And then they had a big win over Missouri as well and beat Penn State. That was a good Arkansas team. But I'm because I think that there's a lot that's applicable when you can go back and if you're just kind of looking at can this guy as a play caller generate offense? I think when you look SEC to SEC comparison, the Big 12 still doesn't play much D, you know. Yeah. So you kind of like SEC to SEC comparison is probably worthy. Now, look, are they going to light up the scoreboard? I don't know. I hope so. But, I mean, again, it's kind of like the offensive line. Just be competent.
I mean, you know, are they going to get shut out in the second half of games, though? I mean, that's the other side of it. Like, I mean, yeah. The whole close talk from last year is, I mean, if you'd have been able to put, you know, some clock eating drives together in the in critical moments and second halves of games last year, you could have easily gotten to bowl eligibility.
Yeah.
But with one drive, can you do that? Can you be one drive better than Mike Shula?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah. Yeah,
right.
And look, dude, I'm going to tell you this. In the COVID year, that was Sam Pittman's first year and Brawl's first year there. That was one of the best coaching jobs ever. If you remember, Chad Morris had just been pretty awful at Arkansas. Thing was in the dumps. And, you know, they came out. I remember watching them on that first weekend they played Georgia at home. Georgia beat them pretty good, 37-10. But then, you know, they intercepted Mike Leach's team like five times and beat Mississippi State. And they almost beat Auburn, which was ranked 13th in the country before they lost the Gamecocks. And they beat Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. They put points on the board. They were 3-7 against an all SEC schedule, but check this out, Phil. They lost to Auburn on the road by 2. They lost to LSU at home by 3. And they lost this game to Missouri 50-48 that I've never seen before. I mean, it was just crazy, crazy loss to Missouri in December. And then they played Alabama, gosh, December 12th. they had postponed that thing. And lost pretty badly, 52-3. But that was a great coaching job. And then that facilitated the next year. Because if you think about it, 3 SEC wins for a team that I think had lost like 18 in a row. And then you had 3 last-second losses on field goals. So, really, you were close to winning 6 SEC football games that season. You know, you look at 3-7, you're like, oh. But, you know, that's the deal there. Harrison said Harrison's always got an answer. Arkansas had a sweet fake field goal touchdown passing that Alabama game you're referencing, JC. Yeah. And said Chad Morris may be the worst SEC head coach of the modern era. The hilarious thing about that, and it's not hilarious because I like Arkansas fans quite a bit. They played Western Kentucky at home, and they had ran off the former quarterback there. In-state kid who was a 4-star kid that they had you know, they just run him off, right? And so it's like, well, you know, he just doesn't fit the system. And you're like, okay, well, that's all right there. And they were not very good. And I think that this was the final straw. So they play Western Kentucky at home. Dude. So I'm trying to find the quarterback's name. This was very, very interesting. Was it Ty Story? Gosh, I can't remember. But anyway, the quarterback there. So let me look. No, can't find it. Phil, find out who the 2019 Western Kentucky Hilltopper quarterback was. Oh, by the way, guess who the D coordinator was at Western Kentucky at that point in time?
Oh, I believe that was a one Clayton White.
Clayton White?
Yeah.
So WKU comes to town. There's only about 32,000 hogs in the stadium. I think it was Ty Story, but look that up for me.
Yeah, Ty Story.
Yeah, four-star kid out of Arkansas. Chad Moore, the Chad, said, "You don't fit what I do. Goodbye."
Goodbye.
And Western Kentucky comes to town, and they beat them 45-19 at home. At home. Can you imagine that, dude? Losing 45-19 at home to Western Kentucky when your backup quarterback that you had run off lights you on fire. That wasn't the low light of life, the low point of the year though, dude.
No.
Back on September 21st, before they knew they were bad, old San Jose State came to Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium in a get-right game. Second straight get-right game, because they struggled to beat Portland State. They lost at Ole Miss by two touchdowns. Not late, this is bad. They kind of pulled an upset over Mike Bobo and Colorado State. Watching that one, they beat a 55-34 at home. I remember watching that game. Bobo dialed up a good game. Then San Jose State comes to town and escapes with a 7-point win. It all went downhill from there. They had a close loss to A&M. They lost at Kentucky. Auburn, and this is when it all, they lost a combined 99-17 to Auburn and Alabama. I'm sorry, 153-41 to Mississippi State, Alabama, Auburn, Kentucky. I just got the dogs. And then Western Kentucky beat them. And I mean, that was so imagine that. You run a kid off, and then he comes back with the Hilltoppers and beats you. So, yes, you're right. That Chad Morris would be up there, right? Because he got more than 1 year.
You know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And all that. Because, yeah, and you think about this, too. That was on the hills of Morris's first year there, where they hardly scored at all. And they played at Colorado State and lost by 7 to Mike Bobo. Mm-hmm. And then North Texas pulled off one of the craziest fake punts I've ever seen in my life. Punt returns I've ever seen in my life, where the kid just kind of stood there and then took off. And North Texas beat him at home 44-17. So Chad Morris lost to Western Kentucky at home 45-19. He lost to San Jose State at home. And he lost to North Texas at home in game 3 of his tenure 44-17. I'd have to give that to you.
Yeah.
I'm about to give that to you, Harris. You know, Craig said about that quarterback threw down that night. Hell yeah.
Yeah, man.
All right. So Matt Hayes from USA Today had a column today. And Phil, this is probably not a wide open Wednesday thing. It may be a Thursday or Friday thing when we get Matt or Alex in here. By the way, we got a VHS dates for Thursday. It's an Asian.
Yes.
But Matt Hayes wrote this column that said, and he thinks because of the round table that the SEC and Big Ten are just gonna break off and do their own super thing and leave everybody behind. I think that was completely be awful. But he was kind of a very reactionary column. I don't think 34 teams are breaking off to be their own thing. I think that there's some value with some other teams. So what we're going to do, fellas, is you're going to be one of the conferences and I'm going to be the other.
All right.
And we're going to have a draft.
Oh, okay.
And cool. Yeah. So we're going to do what? Maybe. So I kind of figured
out 17 teams each to get 34. What about
we got? No, we got, you got 18 in the Big Ten now, 16 in the SEC now. No trades. It's just a draft. And so, we'll get two, the SEC will get two, makeup picks at the end to get them even. Look at the last two. And so we're going to go through we're going to pick over the ACC and Big 12 and American and Notre Dame. And we're going to have a draft to where we can get to, I think it's 48 teams. Would be good.
Okay.
All right. If you get 64, you may as well have four conferences.
That's true.
Yeah. So 48. That's because I'm thinking eight divisions of six, four and four, and go from there. So we'll see. Cause I want to get everybody's opinion of like, what are the attractive programs if that happened? Cause I mean, you may as well go to 24 you're gonna have college football at one level without Notre Dame and Florida State and Clemson and Miami.
Right. I mean, yeah, right.
I mean, I don't know. So we're gonna get into that. So all right, folks.
I like that. That'll be fun.
Terrible Tuesday is over. All right. Yeah.
There's the music. All right.
At the end of the day, just hope for the best with this basketball thing. On a personal level, happy for Lamont Paris. He's a good guy. Like I said, don't wish him any harm. And he's pulling for him next year. And I'm sure there'll be 15 people in the arena until January. I mean, he doesn't really schedule that hard either. So, and there'll be three or four home games people halfway care about. That's not a him thing as much as it's about. You've heard me go on and on about the basketball schedule.
Yeah, it's like you don't need to bolster your strength of schedule when the perception is your league is still number one.
But also, you need to stop scheduling 20 games in November. I'm exaggerating, but
I would
there's no need for all this November basketball.
Something a little bit different could be done.
Yeah,
shift some of that into December.
They're getting paid now. They don't need Christmas break.
There's that argument too. Well, I mean,
basketball season back in the 80s and 90s, every team would play either a Christmas tournament or they'd have a big non-con game the week between, and that's when people kind of started getting into basketball. Right now it's like, oh, we have to take off for another week and a week for exams, and it just dies. And then November you have so many games, and apparently they have meaning because the net counts all of them,
right?
And nobody that has a football team cares. except Duke and North Carolina and Kansas and schools like that. It's about there's a handful of schools that really even care that play football too. So I hope they weren't planning on ticket revenue bolstering any coffers for the men's basketball program.
You got to figure that's.
And I'm not discouraging anybody. Maybe you can get a great deal on season tickets next year, but I'm not discouraging anybody from supporting the program. I'm just acknowledging the reality that it's going to be a hard sell for a little bit.
Yeah.
For the Mad Dog, JC Sherbert here. We'll be back tomorrow. It's Wide Open Wednesday. Tell your friends, tell your peeps that they can get in the chat box tomorrow as we continue to roll on Gamecock Country. It's been the show. See you later.